The Oscar-nominated documentary RBG from the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Up next, Voices from the Edge. Joanne Hardesty is back, and we're very excited to have her here. And she has guests, Jason Kafuri and Julia DeGraw, speaking about campaign finance limits, currently before the Oregon Supreme Court. Joanne, back at work and bringing it to us this morning on KBOO in just a couple of minutes. At 9 o'clock, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. We're making a program switch just today. Flashpoints is moving to 11 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, Heather McCoy will be live. She welcomes evangelical academic activist Chris Stroop, and they will be discussing the Twitter hashtag Expose Christian Schools and the evangelical backlash to the Church 2 movement. So that's at 10 o'clock today. Then at 11, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein looking at the situation in Venezuela. But up next, it's Joanne Hardesty and Voices from the Edge on KBOO.
Is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, February 4th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen The Wiz, an adaptation of The Wizard of Oz that tries to capture the essence of the African-American experience. Again, that's The Wiz, showing Monday, February 4th at 7 p.m., at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty, and I am thrilled to be back with you. It has been a long time since I've had the opportunity to engage with my KBOO family. Before I start today's program, I just want to do a shout-out to Dave Mazza, who we lost last year. Oh, yeah. And, you know, he was such a mentor for me when I came into KBOO, and I just want to say, you know, rest in power, Dave, and say to Marjorie, his life partner, you know, we still got your back. So make sure if you need something that you're not a stranger, and you make sure that we are there to help you. I am so excited about today's program. I have the pleasure of having in a studio with me Jason Kafuri, who are you a partner in your firm? I ask you that every time we talk, right?
You should be a partner. I'm merely just an attorney over there. So.
Merely an attorney, he says. But he is a attorney in Kafuri
and McDougal.
McDougal, which has been in practice and
okay, my dad's been in this for 44, going on 45 years, and he partnered with Mark McDougal 25 years ago, and they've been working together ever since.
Wow. So one of the longest active law firms in the city of Portland. I also am pleased to have Julia DeGraw here, who is now working with Honest Elections. Is that correct?
Yeah, I work with Portland Forward, and I also do some work with Honest Elections through that organization.
And then a few hundred other things.
I wear a lot of hats.
So welcome you both to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It is absolutely my pleasure, and what a great opportunity to come back to KBOO and talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is campaign finance reform. And we've had some progress on this
big
issue,
developments, yeah,
over the last couple of years. And so, Jason, do you want to tell us like where we are now?
Yeah. So a coalition of different organizations in 2015 really launched this effort when we put on the ballot a campaign finance reform measure at the Multnomah County level. That was measure 26184. A group of activists that cared about getting big money out of politics came together on the Charter Review Commission, the Multnomah County Charter Review Commission, and a contentious vote, 7-6, it passed out of that charter directly to the voters. And shockingly, people in Multnomah County and the city of Portland really want to get big money out of politics.
Apparently, right.
89%, that's almost unheard of for a yes vote on a charter, voted yes. The charter did four basic things. Limited individual contributions to $500. Put a cap on how much independent expenditures could be spent, you know, people outside dark money stuff. It created what's called small donor committees so that organizations, nonprofits, groups that want to politically be involved, as long as they can identify that $100 is coming out of each one of their members, they can still make larger contributions to campaigns. And then it also put in place, it banned corporations from giving money, which I didn't realize this, but about 20 or 25 states actually do ban corporations from giving donations to candidates. And one of the other pieces that I really love about it is that it requires both independent expenditures and campaigns to identify to their voters, hey, here are our top five biggest donors. And so, you know, if you're getting big money from somebody, you should be proud.
Right.
Proud to advertise them. Shouldn't be hiding in the shadows. So, you know, here in Oregon, I think a lot of people may not know this. You know, we're one of only five states in the whole country that have no limits at all on how much money we can give to candidates. So after we passed that at the county level, our Honest Elections Oregon effort pushed forward and passed a very similar measure here this last year, 2018, at the City of Portland, 26200. And Joanna, we really appreciate your support all the way through that campaign. And now we are moving forward statewide on several different fronts. So
the Oregon Supreme Court has said that they are going to hear oral arguments on the Multnomah County campaign limits.
Correct. Yes. So
that's exciting.
This is unheard of almost.
Right.
So you know, normally, sort of court 101. If you lose at a county courthouse, which we did on the constitutionality issues, you have to go to the Court of Appeals, and then you have to go to the Supreme Court as the final voice here for the state. But we sent a petition, and the Multnomah County has been defending the Constitution through their attorneys with us on this. We sent a petition to the Court of Appeals, said, hey, it's going to end up at the Supreme Court anyway.
Right.
These are serious constitutional issues that are going to impact elections in the cycles to come. Why don't you agree to kick this directly to the Supreme Court? And that's a very rare move. But they both agreed to do that, the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court agreed to hear it.
Wow.
So we had a two-step process that just happened last week. So the Supreme Court has now determined that in September of 2019, the citizens that filed the appeal, along with the county and the county attorneys that are defending the Constitution, are going to be taking on the Portland Business Alliance, the Oregon Realtors Association, and there's one other big industry group, I can't remember off the top of my head right now, who is battling us on this. So in about 90 days, there will be an initial brief due to the Supreme Court. Then there will be a period for response and then a final reply in July. And what we're doing as a coalition and what we'd love to get people engaged with here is we want to get as many different citizen groups or folks that care about getting big money out of politics to join us in a group amicus brief, a friend of the court brief, to show that there is public support behind this. And we'd love to get the city of Portland. The city attorney has told us point blank that she's going to, quote, vigorously support the constitutionality of these measures that passed at the city and the county. So we'd like to get the city of Portland. And I'd love to get the attorney general to write an amicus brief also. So that's going to be our organizing mission for the next 90 days.
And maybe Governor Kate Brown will step in as well.
She keeps saying she loves campaign finance reform. This would be a great chance for her to really show it.
And so, Julia, what are you doing to actually organize folks to prepare for these upcoming Oregon Supreme Court activity?
Yeah, so since we just heard about this last week, we're just now kicking into high gear with this. But one of the main goals we have is to reach out to all of the groups who were part of the coalition. And also, and I'm trying to think, there was about 30 groups that signed on.
About 35 to 40
groups that signed on to the Honest Elections ballot measure, and for either the Portland or the county measure. I mean, there's a handful of groups that are interested in campaign finance reform, who have not been officially endorsing the campaign up to this point, who we think might be interested in joining as well. So basically,
now that we have momentum, they might be on our side.
Suddenly, you know, and you got the governor talking about it, and you've got, I think it's just, and also, I mean, I think there was an education hurdle here where I think people just didn't understand how much it is the Wild West out here in Oregon, right? You know, and I think when people's eyes kind of widen when you tell them that we have the most expensive statewide elections in the country, except for New Jersey.
Our legislative races per capita, second most expensive. Isn't that amazing?
In the country, right? In Oregon. And I think, you know, and that's a huge barrier to people running for office.
And for people who get paid almost nothing once they get in office.
Right. Oh, yeah. State especially, right? I mean, that's a massive barrier to being a state legislator, honestly. Right. I mean, it's something I had to think about.
A competitive race is easily $1 million just to run. And you know, a lot of that money is getting sent from big corporate PACs.
Right.
Let's be honest, big labor PACs and other, you know, nonprofit PACs also giving big money. So
So we're also doing a lot of work with unions, like trying to bring along a lot of the unions who there's really great success stories that we can see. I think my favorite example right now is from Colorado, because they passed similar campaign finance reform to what we've done in at the county and city level, and that we would propose for statewide, which includes this small donor committee part. And in Colorado, since they instituted that, no corporate donations and small donor committees, the unions have become quite the powerhouse in Colorado politics. I think one of the reasons that Colorado's shifted, you know, more progressive in the recent past is because of the fact that small donor committees are actually really beneficial to unions in helping to make it so their dollars go further, right?
Right. And so there was a you guys organized an event at Lucky Labs earlier this week, and we were like stuffed in like sardines in this room at Lucky Labs.
I was shocked, honestly. I mean, I knew we had some good momentum going, but we had a huge turnout. Julia organized the event, and we'd love to have you there, Joanne. That was great. And we had Sharon Myron from the county commissioner's office. We had State Senator Jeff Golden, newly elected from Southern Oregon, who is chairing, I believe, our first ever campaign finance reform committee. Peter Courtney
Senate.
Allowed it to
in
have that
Senate.
In the Senate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we had Dan Rayfield from down there in Benton County.
Who has been a real champion around this campaign.
I would say he's fought hard around campaign finance reform issues. I don't think he's accomplished things at the legislature to date yet, but that's because of the power structure in place down there. So,
right.
But he's also led some good county county. They have IRV, for example, down there in Benton County. Instant runoff voting is in place down there. So there's been a lot of activism, locally around this issue there. And, you know, I think there was a huge shift in public opinion when they watched the gubernatorial race last year.
Yes.
You know, the highest spent race historically was $18 million combined. This one went up almost to $40 million. And Phil Knight gave $4.5 million in a check. A couple big checks, right. We can't have an even playing field. We can't, you know, if the billionaires can come here and spend millions on a candidate that they want to win, ordinary citizens are never going to be able to play in that system. So,
absolutely true. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Jason Kafoury and Julia DeGraw about campaign about a very exciting Oregon Supreme Court decision to actually take up the issue of campaign finance limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. This is a very exciting time because you're right. I mean, years ago when we started, when Dan Meek,
right? He's been doing this for
now,
decades.
How long ago was that, right?
The quick history lesson. So they passed some very low limits in 94, I think. Then those were thrown out in 97 by the Supreme Court.
Right.
And then they passed limits, and they tried to pass a constitutional referral in 06. The limits passed, but the referral failed by a few points. And so we've been in a limbo for the last 12 years legally about, well, we have limits, but we have this Supreme Court decision which says that they can't be in place. So we've been stuck, stuck for 20 years with the Wild West of big money.
Well, what's interesting is that when we had, I ran for the legislature the first time there was campaign finance reform limits to run for the Oregon legislature.
It must have been 96.
It was 96, right? And so we were limited to $100, right, per donor. No PAC money, no business money. So what did you do? You actually talked to people who could actually give you $100, right? What a concept. And so it is ironic that back then it was seen as something that was preventing people, right, from being able to run and serve in office. And it only lasts one cycle before the Oregon Supreme Court threw it out. Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to add about the Supreme Court. I don't think we covered this, but since the 90s so I want to just really quickly say that there are 36 other states that have the identical language in their constitution that we have in ours.
About freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech clause.
Yeah.
So the Oregon Supreme Court made an outlier decision, a by far outlier decision, because every one of those 36 states has campaign finance contribution limits. Campaign contribution limits, even though they have the same language in their constitutions. And so right now, the state Supreme Court of Oregon since the 90s has replaced, I mean, it's all new judges. So we are really anticipating, the reason why it's so exciting is we are anticipating a different decision that is more in alignment with those 36 other states that have the exact same language and have campaign contribution limits. So that's one of the reasons we're really excited.
Yes. So what do you want the public to do as we prepare to see what the Oregon Supreme Court decides in September?
Well, there's
Julie, you've got a to-do list. We gave you
I do.
On
I prepared
night.
On I Tuesday prepared night, a to-do, to-do list.
I'm shocked.
It's like we have homework for folks.
Organizers, you know.
Organizers.
Yeah,
yes.
we got things for you to do. So, in the next 90 days, in addition to getting organizations signed on to an amicus brief, one of the issues that came up that the judge brought up in the Multnomah County case was that there was vagueness, that it was vague how we defined the disclosure parts of the county ballot measure. Because in the county measure, it's just one sentence. In the city measure, we cleaned that up. We spread it out over three pages. We were very clear about what exactly we meant by disclosures. So the city has passed that into ordinance now, right? We are urging the Multnomah County Commission to put almost identical language into ordinance as well, so that and do that in the next 90 days, so that by the time the Supreme Court case happens, it will no longer be vague, because it would be really sad to lose on that same thing twice, right? So
do you have support for that?
We're working on it.
Well, we can use some citizens backing us up.
So there's two things. You can find out who your commissioner is, right? So we have districts at the county level.
Right.
So you can go to the Multnomah County website, find your commissioner, and send them an email, or maybe give them a call. Both would be great. And Chair Kafoury is countywide. He's everyone's chair. So everyone should be contacting Chair Kafoury as well, and urging them to pass this. And every meeting, every public county meeting from here for to the end of February. We're going to send one or two folks to give public testimony, and anyone who wants to show up and, mm-hmm. and be in solidarity with us in making this request are welcome to join us for the next month.
Is there a website that people can go to get the language that you would like them to use?
That is a really good question. I was going to send out an email with this information mm-hmm. to our groups. I'm trying to think. I could actually add this to the Portland Forward website really easily. I could do a blog post and also on Facebook. So that's a really good idea.
But we'll put it on both websites. Okay. There's on Honest Elections.
HonestElections.org.
Yeah, HonestElections.org. PortlandForward.org.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Because, you know, people will get there and go, you need to pass something, right?
Yeah, do a thing. Yeah, no, it'll be, no, that's a really good call. And we'll be sending out emails about it and do Facebook posts as well. So that's a quick thing we want to do in the next 90 days.
And that's something people don't even have to leave their house to do, right?
They can
do it in less than a minute. Once they find who their Multnomah County Commissioner is, and of course, the chair is everybody's chair. Mm-hmm. And yes, quick email, quick phone call. Show up if you can.
And show up if you can. We'll put those dates up there. We don't want to throw off the schedule of the day, which is why we're only going to have 1 to 3 people testifying. Right. But if you want to show up and hear what's being said and show that you're in support, you can stand behind the testifiers. It's mm-hmm. really powerful when citizens show up and show that they care about an issue. And I think that really... Commissioner Myron actually made this point at the Lucky Lab event that... Mm-hmm. That if everyone in that room were to make a phone call and send an email, that, you know, there was probably about 70 of us, mm-hmm. that would have an impact. And yes. I think, you know, we're going to get more than 70 people to do this if we do our jobs right. So
wonderful. So that's the first piece of homework.
We also want folks to, if you wanted to reach out to us because you have an idea of who could be signing on to the amicus brief, mm-hmm. feel free to reach out to us. Those websites have our contact information.
And let me just say, amicus brief sounds very legalese.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Right? And so basically what we're asking for is people's personal stories about how money has impacted politics.
They don't even need to do that. So the way it's technical, but the record is the record that was set at Judge Block's piece. So we need people to say we agree with the principles of this, and we will help construct a joint amicus brief. Yeah, for people. So we just need we need sign on support.
So we just need you just need to know that once you develop this statement, that there'll be lots of people willing
who can sign on to it.
And,
exactly.
And for example, Joanne, your declaration that you put into the public record that went to the county judge is now going to be one of the issues that the Supreme Court can utilize when it looks at, is there corrupting influence and big money in politics?
Wonderful.
Right. Well, I was just going to.
Run a roll here.
The last, at the city level, it's the same thing. We want to ask the city to join this brief, and I think it's looking promising that will happen. Hopefully that won't be a heavy lift on our end.
If only we knew
somebody on city council.
Right. Somebody should be able to help you with that, right?
No, I think we got a few, so that'll be good. And we're really excited. Quick side note: we're really excited to see the campaign donation limits partnered with the public finance that the city has. Because I personally feel that campaign contribution limits without public funding is challenging. It actually, especially if you have other people who aren't going to, seek the public fund. So anyway, I think that that's a really good way to level the playing field mm-hmm. and make sure that candidates have the resources they need to run, really strong campaigns. Right. And I think our democracy is worth the investment.
By the way, how is the mayor? Has he been funding the public funding?
Yes, he has. He has funded it. Has not fully funded it, but it has been funded. And just yesterday, we voted the committee in will provide the oversight for the campaign finance committee at the city of Portland. So I'm very, very excited. And I have to give a shout out to Commissioner Amanda Fritz, because she mm-hmm. has been just tirelessly making sure that we were moving the ball forward, because the 2020 elections will be when that money will first be available for candidates for the city of Portland. So I'm very excited that we're moving forward and we're keeping an eye on it. The good news is that the city council now would have to take an affirmative action to defund right? So it's funded, and so unless there's an action taken, and I don't believe there are three votes on the city council to actually undo the public finance system. So
that's
so
exciting.
What one thing that we do need, I think, to tweak about that public financing system is, as I understand how it's currently written, if you're taking the public funding, you can't take any outside money. And if that's true, and there's a limited pot of how much there is, and too many people run and utilize the public funding, you're going to have a serious candidate sitting there looking at themselves saying, this pot could run out. I could be 30 days away, and I can't raise outside money. I'm not going to go public funding. And so that tweak needs to be fixed.
Well, we sure look forward to you coming to the Oversight Committee and making that presentation. Yes. And I know that hopefully you can hang out until 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Are you good? Jason's going to have to leave at 8:30.
So I'm in the middle of a jury trial. I got to be at court in 35
Thank you for making time,
minutes.
Jason. Right. And right. I've got plenty to. I haven't talked about the state yet. So yeah, we got lots
well,
to cover.
Well, we're going
to
just shift gears for just a moment because one of my campaign promises was to pull Portland out of the Joint Tourism Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
We've been fighting at this for a while, back and forth, back and forth.
Talk about fights that just take decades to finally get people to see that we know what we're talking about, right? But we have now scheduled a work session for February 12th, and the ordinance will be heard and voted on February 13th.
That's exciting.
It is very, very exciting. And if we're going to have a rally at 1 o'clock. So both of these hearings will take place at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But for the day that we're going to be voting on it, we'll have a rally outside City Hall at 1 p.m.
So on the 13th?
So on the 13th at 1 p.m. will be
great.
A rally right outside City Hall just before the hearing starts. And so I want to encourage as many people as possible to come. Now, since the FBI has been reading that one of my first priorities was pulling us out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, they've been having lots of meetings to talk about the importance of us staying in
lobby.
The joint. Oh my gosh. I mean, it took 10 of them to come to my office and explain, you know, why we need to stay in. Let me just say that their arguments weren't compelling. They say that they're now fighting white supremacy, which was a shock to me because I actually thought that was the FBI's job, was to fight white supremacy outside of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. I also understand that there's a Portland police officer that now claims that his sole work is around white supremacy activity. So all of a sudden, lots of people are working on white supremacy, but nobybody's been actually charged or prosecuted for white supremacy activity so far.
They probably don't have a list either of people that are guilty of
They did not. They didn't show it to me anyway. And so
you don't have top secret clearance. That's your problem, Julia.
Well, I mean, that's what right. But neither did any other mayor or police commissioner or police chief. Now, Chief Outlaw does have that top clearance, so she gets more information, I guess, than anybody else. But the bottom line is, we have Portland police officers working for the FBI for the Joint Terrorism Task Force that we have no ability to supervise, right?
Right.
We know that the federal government has taken a very a discriminatory stance against immigrants and refugees and people of color and anybody that's not white, male, middle class, right?
Right.
And so I think it's more compelling than ever now for us to pull out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And Jason, I know you had some.
Well, you know, we've been at this struggle for a lot of years. I just wanted to comment because I have information that most people would never know due to the fact that we file, you know, a lot of lawsuits against the city of Portland.
Right.
We get access to depositions. We get access to documents. And we did a case involving an activist 6 or 7 years ago who was protesting at it was an Israeli-Palestinian protest. And what we learned from that experience was that the Portland police had, at that point, a 7-member criminal intelligence unit. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know they had such a unit. If you go into their deep budgets, you can sort of see a budget line for it. But what we learned is that criminal intelligence unit sends undercover officers to peaceful protests to be undercover at those protests and to do surveillance. And we have a state law that's very clear that you are not allowed to do undercover, protest analysis. That it's illegal to do that if you're doing that for things that include people's political beliefs.
Right, right.
So I don't trust the JTTF, and I know that we have to have two Portland police officers on the JTTF, hearing everything that's happening. I don't trust that the FBI will not be doing surveillance type stuff utilizing our Portland police officers after what I learned during that experience. And so, and I guarantee it, if you ask them to confirm right. that they're not doing it, they won't. Let's look at the one big thing that the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force did was stop the guy who was going to try to blow up something at the Pioneer Courthouse Square, right?
Oh, the tree, but, right.
The tree, right? That was their one big thing they've done in Portland. Well, let's not forget the one tape where the guy was supposedly given the out, which right. you're supposed to do, say, hey, there's another out.
Right.
Of all the tapes they documented him, that was the one tape that didn't work. And I just – and I ever wow. since that moment, I've always thought to myself – There's something that doesn't sound right here. So,
well, there are a lot of people that believe that. I mean, the FBI set that up. I mean, it's like this guy was leaving the country, and they were like, no.
And the FBI, has a long history. We could go through it forever. I don't have time right now. But I mean, decades and decades and decades of infiltrating organizations, left
and peaceful activists. I mean, they have really big problems, and they're going after peaceful activists.
What I would ask the JTTF is, what concrete things, by being part of our Portland police force, have you actually been able to accomplish that you couldn't accomplish without having two Portland police officers part of it?
So let me tell you what they told me. I don't know if this is how they're testified at City Hall, but what they told me is that if they didn't have two Portland police officers, they couldn't get people connected to mental health services in the community. I laugh too, right? But that's exactly what they told me. It was absolutely necessary. So I understand that you're going to have to leave.
I have to run, but I support the effort. I'm actually going to be out of the country, unfortunately, during that vote. But I believe that you guys will pull us out.
I would love you to provide written testimony that I'd be happy to read into the record if you're unable to be there.
But between my dad and I, we will get something to you by next week.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Appreciate you being here.
Onwards, everyone.
All right. So. Thank you so much. Go win your court case. The good guys are in the courtroom.
And I'm also definitely going to be there to testify and for the rally.
That's exciting. The rally. Excellent. We have a caller. Good morning, Linda. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. Hey, Joanne, this is Linda Olson Osterlund, and I did a program on the Fusion Center.
Ah, yes.
And I'm having echoing. I don't know if you are.
I'm not, but go ahead. Okay, you sound beautiful here.
Mm-hmm.
We have, as do all the other municipalities in the state, I believe, have members of local law enforcement agencies who sit on the Fusion Center and go to the Fusion Center, which is combining all the different kinds of law enforcement and under Homeland Security. Our most local one is at Clackamas Community College, kind of hidden there. What I don't know is if we get the police officers not to go to the JTTF, does that mean the officers who go to the Fusion Center will no longer go? Are they one and the same, or are they separate? Or will they be able to still go to the Fusion Center and put Oregon names into a system that goes nationwide?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I actually have an appointment with the staff person who is assigned from the city of Portland to the Fusion Center. And I am meeting with him soon, and that is one of my questions about, because the Fusion Center, can you tell folks what the Fusion Center is?
Well, there's now many more than there used to be, but when I saw it, there were 40 of them in the nation, and what they are is the physical entity where all law enforcement at all levels, including park rangers and tribal law enforcement and any law enforcement associated with anything, have a representative or a halftime representative who goes to this Fusion Center, and they bring in any kind of suspicious, like if they want to investigate a person they believe might be doing some harm. They put their names in and their information, and that information is available to anyone all the way over to Northcom or to any Fusion Center, say in New York City or Kansas. It's also been shown that they have looked at Occupy They were coordinating work on Occupy, coordinating work on Black Lives Matter. So they're not focusing on terrorism of the kind we think. Sorry, I get nervous when I talk about
that. That's okay.
Let me take a deep breath.
It's scary stuff.
I visited both of their fusion centers. I have a list of the numbers of police that were assigned to them back then, but that's like 5 years ago. What I don't know is if the JTTF assigned officers are the same officers assigned to the fusion center. When our names go into the fusion center, Oregon says they won't let them stay there longer than our statute, but they can't say what the feds do with those names. They
exactly.
go into a federal system immediately, which can hold them and spread them ongoingly just under suspicion.
Right.
We know that they've been spying on these other things from FOIAs.
Yes.
So
right.
very important to know what the fusion center is doing, not just the JTTF.
Very excellent point. And, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right?
Yes, but since you're going to be able to meet with them, I think you're going to get a chance to have a big bite. Because, you know, they'll read you the thing where they say that they purged the names after 2 years.
Right.
And then I turned to the officer I was talking to and I said, but that doesn't have the feds purge them. And he just shrugged his shoulders and said, well.
That's not me, right?
And that's a violation of Oregon law.
Yes, it is. And I think that's part of the big problem, right? We already know that we are under such surveillance every single day, and that we know that Portland police are doing the license plate readers and all that information is fed into someplace, right?
It's fed into the Fusion Center as well. Right. And the Fusion Center's buy, at that time they bought from seven large data aggregating commercial sources.
Wow.
They also have dumps from Treasury, which means your tax information.
Wow.
That's disturbing.
They can get everything and they can coordinate. If you say you drive down Burnside to work every day where there are those license plate readers, the fixed ones,
right.
They can when they look into your license, they can find your travels anywhere where those things are.
Wow.
It's a very, very intrusive and pervasive surveillance and activity. They coordinated actions on how to shut down Occupy. I believe they probably did that on Occupy ICE as well, because if you'll listen, you can hear the same language. But I don't have FOIAs to prove that.
Right.
We do know they investigated an African-American woman who was married to a DOJ person. And these are also authorized by our state DOJ, which is really, how can you authorize something right. that you know the feds go away with those names you put in?
Right, right. But then with a straight face, you say, but we're following Oregon law, right?
Right, exactly.
You've
got it, Joanne. I'm so glad you're on the ball.
Oh, thank you.
You're here.
What a pleasure.
I've been talking about this for 5 years, and everybody looks at me like I'm some kind of conspiracy.
No, this is real, and it's having an impact on people's life. And again, based on my conversations with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, they gave no good reason why we should be a part of that at all. Thank you so much for your call, Linda, and I'm going to be going into your archives to get some additional information before that meeting. Have a great day. And by the way, what's coming up today on The Boo at 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, on The Heather McCoy Show, Heather welcomes evangelical academic activist Chris Stoop. They will be discussing the Twitter hashtag Expose Christian Schools and the
evangelical.
This morning. Thank you. backlash to the hashtag Church2 movement. At 11 is Flashpoint with Dennis Bernstein. As always, thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support of this station. Without you, we would not be here. And if you're so inclined to go to kboo.fm and make a donation today, hey, we will support your donation by matching it today, I understand. All right. So, Julia, let's go back to I wanted to get the piece in about the Joint Terrorism Task Force before Jason Kafoury had to leave. But there's real excitement now around campaign finance limits And you've been doing some remarkable work about just like letting people know how they can plug in. So mm-hmm. you had a couple of other things you wanted to make sure we share.
Oh, yeah. In terms of the we were working our way through the homework list, the to-do items for activists. We have a lot of exciting momentum at the state level as well. Because of how expensive the governor's race was, and also I think our memories are very, very short, but if we can all like rewind a little bit and remember the independent candidate who dropped out,
yes,
did so because he got some kind of verbal commitment from Governor Brown that her top priority would be campaign finance reform.
Oh.
That was his number one issue. It's what he was campaigning on. And he was like, I will drop out if you do something to get big money out of politics, right? And she made that commitment and he dropped out.
She's publicly said she's on board.
She's made lots of, I think that's one of the reasons why there's so much momentum here. What that means is at the state level, I guess this is a little bit of a civics lesson. We can get something referred from the governor's office to the state legislature. And there's two different things that we're looking for here.
Okay.
One is, they could possibly refer a constitutional amendment that would define in our constitution that campaign finance limits are legal, right? Even if we win the Supreme Court, it doesn't necessarily hurt to get a constitutional amendment as well, just so that we can like really, really, really enshrine into Oregon, you know, constitutionality that like this is legal. and also, you know, like we want to, you know, not rely just on a court decision. We want to be able to like make sure we recover all our bases. But the other thing that we're asking for is that the state legislature, it would be great if the governor's office could refer to the state legislature campaign donation limits for a statewide candidates, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And we want those campaign donation limits to be significant, to be meaningful, mm-hmm. right? So what we're encouraging folks to do is to contact the governor's office and say, you know, not just to refer a constitutional amendment to the state legislature, but also to refer meaningful campaign finance reform that includes meaningful contribution limits, and also the disclosures that we mentioned, all the stuff that's in the county and city policies.
So the city one is the best one, right?
Yes, the city one is the model. The city one's the model. Just want them to do the. And the thing that we're, you can quibble over at that point is the size of, like, for statewide, what's the limit?
Right.
You know, for and I think it'll be a lot less confusing, frankly, for unions and mm-hmm. all these groups that can do small donor committees mm-hmm. to have the same process across the board. Right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, it'll be so complicated if they have to have a small donor committee for like local races and they have to have, you know, it's like, let's get consistent across the board. The fight there is going to be then to get state legislature to not water it down.
Right.
God help us. So so that's the other homework item, right, is figure out who your state legislator is and send them an email and give them a phone call saying, hey, you know, would you please support and help pass meaningful campaign finance reform and kind of define what that is. We'll mm-hmm. have language for that mm-hmm. in an email and on our website. Yes.
Now, I have a question because it got a little heated the other night mm-hmm. because we have campaign finance limit law already on the books mm-hmm. for the state of Oregon. What we don't have on the books is the constitutional provision that allows that to take place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say the Oregon Supreme Court says, yes, campaign finance limits are constitutional, right?
Mm-hmm.
We must actually have a bigger conversation about what that looks like in Salem. Because again, when I ran with the $100 limit, and so I ran in a 80% Democratic district, so it was easy. I won't say easy, but it was easier to actually be able to abide by the $100 per person. And I think it was a $25,000 maximum. Talk about how long ago that was, right? $25,000 maximum for a primary election and $50,000 maximum for a general election.
Right.
If you think about the cost of legislative races, mm-hmm. I mean, that's like a drop in the bucket as compared to what people are spending today. So what do you think the process will be at the state level to actually come to some consensus about what a reasonable limits will be on those races?
That's a really good question. And what I have to say to that is is there's a reason why we have our third item here on our to-do list.
Okay.
which has to do with the ballot measure.
Uh-huh.
because you can't do change work unless you believe change is possible.
Right, right.
And you can't believe change is possible if you don't believe that people can do the right thing.
Yes, yes.
Right? So I am absolutely committed to giving the state legislature a chance mm-hmm. to do the right thing. And a lot of them, a lot of our elected officials on both sides of the aisle mm-hmm. recognize that the current system is not okay, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's like a canyon of difference between what most of those legislators feel like a solution is and what Oregon voters, what Multnomah County and Portland voters passed at the ballot box, right? Right. I think it'll be very challenging for us to get to the point where the state legislature is down for the level of campaign contribution limits that Oregonians actually want and are
right.
looking for.
Right.
With the small donor committees and the disclosures, I think the small donor committees really help. And I also think if we're going to be really honest about what we need from the state legislature is, and if you're worried about being able to raise enough money, we need to have public funding, right?
Right.
That's the third prong of this.
That's
it's going to kind of happen separately.
Right.
But I mean, if you're concerned about candidates being able to raise enough money to have staff and whatnot,
right.
you need public funding for that.
Right.
And I think that if you like, if you're talking about such smaller budgets, say it's like, you know, if you raise, you know, 40,000, they'll match whatever. Right. You know what I mean? I think that there's ways of doing that that I think are actually very pro-democratic. And, mm-hmm. and then people talk about how challenging it is to pass public financing. And I'm like, I think that we can have an honest conversation with voters about right. why this is good for their democracy.
Right.
And they'll be able to come along.
I think you and I had those kind of conversations on the doorstep
yes.
throughout the whole election cycle. And people get it. Regular people get it.
Yeah, there is this assumption that you can't talk to voters right. about these issues. And also, like, I've been thinking about this because I...
We got a caller on
sorry,
the line.
Sorry, yes. Yeah.
Good morning, Harry. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, greetings, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
The question I have is there any criminal or civil penalties for those who violate the campaign finance laws that you're proposing?
What a great question, and the answer is yes, yes, yes. We have certainly learned our lesson, and I will speak directly to the city of Portland. We have certainly learned our lesson when we had voter-owned elections in the city of Portland. Unfortunately, the first time it rolled out, people figured out a way to game the system, right? And the good news is that they were prosecuted, they were held accountable, but it just created just this bad taste in people's mouth when they realized that people were abusing this new system. We've learned a lot from voter-owned elections, and the new system is going to be set up to make sure that there are severe penalties for people misusing the new system that is in place.
So is it criminal penalty where they can go to jail, or civil where they have to pay a fine?
You know, I honestly don't know whether...
I'm pretty sure it's fine-based.
I don't know. Julia says that she believes it's fine-based. I don't know the actual answer to that right off the top.
I think it depends on
the
violation. Right. You know, if it's like that you're accepting donations that are larger than the campaign finance limit, it's going to be a fee.
It's going to
you
be
know
a,
what I mean?
A financial
if it's,
one, right.
If it's a different kind of infraction, I don't have... This is a really good Jason question,
right.
frankly,
right,
for our
right,
attorneys
right.
no longer in the room. One of the things that we actually did with the city, I mean, with the city ordinance, and that we're hoping to get passed at the county before the Supreme Court is part of the implementation is enforcement. And so what we did is we explained very clearly... in a timely manner, how suspected campaign finance violations need to be reported to the city auditor, mm-hmm. and the auditor needs to look into it in a certain amount of time, mm-hmm. and take action within a certain amount of mm-hmm. time. So, like, we really clarified that in the city ordinance, and we are hoping to get the county to pass that ordinance in the next 90 days, so that we have more fleshed out language in both.
And we just put the committee together, the oversight committee for the city of Portland. We just voted on establishing that committee. So they will have an opportunity to really dig deep into the statute and make sure that if there are any improvements that need to be made before it launches, we'll be able to do that.
And that's for the public funding part.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking my question.
You're very welcome, and thank you for the call. That was a great question. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. And so, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
off. Oh, yeah, no,
you
it was good.
You were about to say there's another piece of homework assignment?
Yeah, the last one, okay. I promise. It's the last one, everyone.
Promises, so, promises, right?
I mean, there's always more work to be done as an organizer. There's not enough hours in the day. But the last one is, as much as I will do whatever I can to support a good process in the state legislature, because part of supporting a good process also prevents like worst outcomes too, right? But ultimately, we may end up needing to take take this to the ballot. So right now, there's signatures that we can we're able to gather signatures for the constitutional amendment, at least that piece for the ballot. So we are seeking signature gatherers, people who want to do volunteer signature gathering. This would be for the 2020 ballot measure, in case we don't end up getting a referral from the state legislature.
Yeah, got to cover all the bases.
Yeah, covering
right?
all the bases. And that one's been in the works for a long time. And it was like long before we knew this was going to be going to the Supreme Court, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, this work has been going, as we talked earlier, for decades. So
excellent. And so the most immediate, I think, are going to either the Honest Elections website or what was the other website?
Portland Forward.
Getting information so that you can go and contact your county commissioner and the chair of Multnomah County to ask them to pass the enabling language legislation, right?
Yes, yeah.
We want to make sure that people go to either website, Honest Elections or Portland Forward, and say, yes, I would be happy to sign on to a statement to the court to say, we definitely need to take big money out of politics, right? Mm-hmm. The other one is contacting your legislators and telling them you support campaign finance limits and encouraging them to move the ball. The fourth is to make sure that that we also encourage our legislators to support the constitutional amendment, mm-hmm. that they can actually implement at the legislature. And then I would casually say, and if you don't do it, the people will, right?
That's exactly it. I mean, that's the deal with all of this, especially including the campaign donation limits.
Yes.
When you can pass something in Multnomah County or the city of Portland with almost 90% of the vote, you got Republicans, you got Libertarians, you got people from every different
walk of life,
right? And that will pass at the state level.
Yes.
Something exactly like what we passed locally will pass statewide. And I think that really is what has shifted the conversation of the state legislature, is their recognition that this is, the train has left the station. You can either be at the table with us or we're going to like do this ourselves, right? You know, so that's where we're at.
Absolutely. And I believe we have another caller on the line. Good morning, George. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good morning, Joanne and guests, and thank you so much. I'm looking at a book by Michael Parenti, Democracy for the Few, and Parenti is a longtime activist for, well, socialism and the insights of it. And in the chapter on which has campaign finance problems, he says, well, a wealthy individual, limited by law, he says here on page 204, of, I think it's the seventh edition of his Democracy for the Few, on page 204, he says, campaign contributions are limited by law. Now, I think he's talking, well, I don't know, nationally maybe, by law to $1,000 per person. But if 50 top executives give $1,000 each and so on, that's so much money. But he says a rich individual can make a host of contributions in the name of relatives, devoted staff, or whomever. In addition, there are the travel accommodations, fat speaking fees, and other free services that companies are happy to provide to needy or greedy legislators.
Right.
I just wanted to ask, is all this already solved, or is this still kind of out there waiting for us after we fix a few things?
So, yeah, the campaign donation limits you're talking about are actually help make our point, which is that even at the federal level, these donations are limited. So it's in some ways it's easier to run for Congress in Oregon because you have to abide by these federal donation limitations that don't apply to Oregon races, right?
Let me ask you, though, if the person is, if a wealthy corporation decides to give, let's say, $50 billion to help a national election candidate they like, and they manage to find thousands of individuals whose relationships to the corporation and to the money they are making available to these people to give money for a candidate are obscure, how the heck do we solve that?
So the campaign contribution disclosures get at that. So this is like, we obviously need to overturn Citizens United, but since Merrick Garland is not on the Supreme Court, we've got issues there. So the best thing we can do for the dark money and disclosure is disclosures.
Well,
so let me finish, please. So when a really good example of this is in California, in the city of Richmond, where you have Chevron that has these refineries, and Chevron basically tried to buy city elections when people got organized enough to run slates of candidates. That were like anti-Chevron, that were pro-people, that were pro-worker. Chevron dumped millions of dollars into a campaign to defeat their elections, but they had to disclose on all their mailers that they were the ones giving all the money, right? Mm. Even though it was through a PAC with some like nice name, like, you know, Californians for Kittens and Puppies or something, right? They the people could see that it was actually Chevron speaking to them, and they weren't going to listen. So the best
thing
we can do for the dark money stuff is disclosures, and if that money is going into a PAC, which is the only way you can do like a $50,000 donation, or is through some kind of a committee, you have to like actually identify who those top donors are. And then the other thing I want to mention is, like, you're not incorrect about the fact that like Phil Knight and all of his friends can, like, you know, donate $500 each. Say the $500 is our limit. I do not believe that Phil Knight is going to be able to get more $500 donations than AFSCME or like, you know, SEIU or any, like,
right.
I mean, the small donor committees that are the unions in this state, I think are going to be much more effective at like getting money that represents people than our corporate interests. And it's like, I'm not telling you our corporate interests aren't going to try to do that, but I think that it's going to be really hard for the Phil Knights of the world. And I think a really good example to look at is Colorado, like the way that the campaign finance reform in Colorado really shifted the entire legislature and politics in that state, in my mind, in a way that's very pro-democratic and that does a better job of representing the people of that city or of that state.
Well, thank you. This sounds pretty hopeful, and I'm just going to be watching and listening over the next few months and years, and bless you and good luck with it.
Well, thank you so
thank
much,
you.
But don't just watch and listen. Call your county commissioner, your state legislators, and make sure that your voice is included in this process. Thank you so much for your call. Have a great day. So we just are minus on minutes. We're down to the last couple of minutes. Do you want to give your website again so that folks know how to reach you when this program's over?
Yeah, so it's honestelections.org. And portlandforward.org are the two places where you can go. And frankly, I have to be honest here. I have not updated the website yet. So by the end of the week, that information will be available for you. I have a printout. I was getting ready for this event. So I was very event-oriented just recently. But we'll make sure that's on the website. And we'll also post it on our Facebook pages. And that's how you can stay apprised of what's going on and how you can plug in.
Well, I just want to thank everybody so much. It's so wonderful to be back in the saddle again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like I'm back home, and I'm looking forward to being here on Thursdays, as many Thursdays as I can. Sometimes City Hall will get in the way. Next week, I want to spend the program talking about the Joint Tourism Task Force so that we can make sure that we're educating the public about what it does and what it doesn't do. And so we can be very prepared for February 12th and 13th, when we will have the opportunity to both have a work session, which will have invited testimony. So even though the public won't be able to weigh in, it will be really important for the public to show up in good numbers so that my colleagues understand that the public is paying attention and they want this to happen. Again, thank you very much, Julia. thank you, Jason Kafoury. He's off fighting a good fight. And I will see all of you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Good morning. It's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. A slight schedule change for today at 10 o'clock. Flashpoints is going to be moved actually to 11 o'clock. And at 10 o'clock, Heather McCoy welcomes evangelical academic activist Chris Stroop. They will be discussing the Twitter hashtag expose Christian schools and the evangelical backlash to the Church 2 movement. That's at 10. Then at 11, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, a look at the situation in Venezuela. Thank you to KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not one, please go to kboo.fm and click on donate and support to get, and you get your donation matched today. So go to kboo.fm and have your donation doubled, matched today. This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Real Music Film Festival through February 16th at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. On Thursday, January 31st, the Real Music Festival will screen the documentary Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band. This film investigates the history and present-day atmosphere of this special art form. Again, that's the Real Music Film Festival showing Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band on Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Whitsell Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Thanks for joining me. I have been witness over the last